Last time we talked about a couple of, basically we're now, it's the last lecture of the year, so you can do basically whatever you guys want. Okay, if you don't want to do anything, I'll threaten to give you more problems. So, which might be which quite possibly might do, just because maybe at least just talk about them. First of all, does anybody have any luck with any of the problems we talked about last time? Anybody have any problems with work since last time we met? Okay, again, it's sort of that time of year. But okay, anybody want to talk about any problems we've looked at this semester? Okay, yes.
The shoemaker problem?
Shoemaker problem, okay. This is one. Which one was this one?
This was from the sorting.
Sorting section, way back when?
Page 94.
94. And this was telling us that we had a shoemaker who had, for every job, he had two parameters, if I remember correct. He had that how many days the job would take and how much of a penalty he paid for being late, right? So the job he had, for every job he had the length of the job, okay, which was what? What do you call that? The cost, what was it called? That was the TI, the time limit. He also had a penalty, SI, for how many cents per day would he get billed for not having started working by a particular time, right? That's how he describes what the delay is, right? Mm-hmm. And the question is, given a set of jobs, okay, one to end, can we find an ordering of the jobs so as to minimize the amount of penalty that he's going to pay in terms of this? Usually all the jobs are worth doing, but he wants to minimize his penalties. So can he order the jobs so as to minimize the amount of penalty paid? Okay? So what was I going to say an example here? We went through a couple of examples here. Let's say there was a job that took two time units that cost three penalties of delay, and another one that cost, took 4 day penalty days, but took 2 days cents worth of delay per day. So this is the time, and this is the penalty. And this is job number one and two. What would be the right schedule to minimize the penalty here? Put job one first or job two first? There's only two possible orders, so one could probably try both of them, just to make sure we understand that. If you put job one first, it took two times, then job two took 4 units. Job one paid no penalty of delay. Job two paid 2 cents a day times 2 days, right? The other one would have been to start the big job first. Okay, the 4-unit job and then the 2-unit job. This job here will pay, the 2-unit job is 4 days late and pays 3 cents a day. It pays a cost of 12, so the first order is the winner. Does everybody agree with that? So how do we find the right ordering of jobs to minimize the penalty? I would say that there's a couple of different ideas, several of which probably don't work. Let's try what might be a reasonable idea. Let's think a little bit of what the ideas might be, strategies might be, and then see if we prove it right or wrong. Any ideas?
One thing you can do is try sorting it by time it takes to do a job.
So you want to do this? You want to do the long jobs first or the short jobs first? In principle, which would seem like it'd be better.
No, do the shorter jobs.
Shorter jobs first, because every job, the idea would be that if we did the short jobs first, the penalty is paid on the basis of when the job starts, right?
So you have one job that took a million days to do. If you did that one first, it added a million days worth of penalty to every job behind it, right? So that would be an argument that shortest job first would be a good idea. Did someone come up with an example where that's not the case? The shortest example, job first, does not do the give you the right solution.
You have one big job that has a very small penalty, but a bunch of smaller jobs that have a huge penalty.
Or one small job with a huge penalty. So let's say that the job was delayed four, paid a penalty of one. Let's say the short job had a penalty of a million, and the long job had a penalty of one. Then if we put the short job first, add then the long job, we're only paying 2 days worth of penalty times one. But if we put the long job first, which is better? Let's think about this. So here, in this case, are we better off having the short job or the long job first?
Short job first.
Short job first. Okay, so that's not a counterexample for short job first. How would we make it a counterexample for short job first? What if I add a job of length one that pays a penalty of one, let's say? Now you do the short job first, the medial job second. This middle job is going to pay a penalty of 1 million, which could have been avoided by doing either of the other, you're doing this job first. Does everybody agree with that? Is that a convincing proof? So shortest job first doesn't do the job. What other algorithm heuristics might someone try? What other criteria seems like a reasonable criteria? I know we worked this out. Yeah, what's... Okay, what's one that gets past the judge?
It's a ratio.
A ratio of the two. What is the ratio of the two?
It's,
a ratio, was it a ratio or a product, or which one was it?
Time times by cost. Or the failure.
So you want time over cost. Okay, that was the way that you did this. Is this right?
Yes.
So you would say that if we're looking at these jobs, time over cost, 1/1 is 1. Time over cost is 0.00001. Time over cost is 4. You would do what more job in order? You would inverse this one?
Yeah, this is more.
Now, why would we believe that? Okay, so that in this case seems to do a reasonable job. Why is that right? You have a proof of it being right. let's think about this for a little bit. Does this actually work? Okay. This is not the same answer I believe that we tried last time. You also, I know, got it to work, right? And I don't think you used this. I do remember we had proven a different measure correct. This may or may not work out for the same thing. So let's think what this is actually meaning now. Why might it, is there any reason if we have two jobs sorted by time and cost, by this measure, is there any reason why we might flip them? Okay, let's think a little bit about that. Okay, so here we have one where we have T1 over T2 over C1, T2 over C2. We know that this is less than this. is there any reason why sorting, reversing them, might lead to a better result? To prove that it doesn't, then that's an argument that it's correct, right? So let's just think about it. First, suppose C1 equals C2, just to try to get some sense of this, see if this is maybe right or reasonable. If the costs are the same, are we better off having the smaller dime before the longer dime?
Yes, because you completing the first job first is going to take the smallest amount of time, so you're going to be paying the smallest penalty.
Right. So I think that it's clear that somehow the total penalty for this job is going to be, where did it appear? The total penalty for this job is, where did it start here? Right? Times its cost. If we swap them, what is going to happen? We're going to have the bigger one out here. Smaller one will end at the same time if we sort of swap these guys, right? This one will pay the same penalty as before, but this one will pay more penalty, right? So that's the argument. So certainly in the case of the shorter job, the jobs being equal cost, that makes sense. What if they make equal length? Does this make sense? There's two jobs of equal length. Okay? But the costs are different. This would argue that the one with the bigger cost is going to be first. Is that what you would want to see happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense too, right? Okay? Now, is there a way we can prove it in general? Okay, so we agree that in two special cases, this is going in the right direction. Okay, so if we multiply this by C1, C2, C1, C2, and this, I remember, is exactly the condition we proved last time, right? Okay? So if you now go back in the tapes for our discussions from before, we had a proof that this heuristic was right. Okay, and this heuristic is in fact exactly what that one is. Okay? So I do believe that that works. Okay? But we needed a proof of that, which I remember we gave last time. We can try to reconstruct it, but I would be willing to try to move on with that. So this has sort of the job by this criteria, and that that would work. Okay? And that might be a relatively easy one to get work on scattering the problem for the end of the semester. Any other questions? Any other questions about this one? So that I think we now sort of understand. Okay? What are any other problems people want to discuss from the past? Or potentially subject you to another system more? At least for discussion purposes, you guys do what you can do. But, yes?
I remember one problem that I did with my Gilbert, I wasn't sure how to use the right approach. It was Vito's address, where Vito job, Vito was moving on to the street.
Right.
And then giving you the addresses, the street numbers.
Right.
All of the his relatives live on the street.
Right.
And modify it so that he would have to do the
Right. So, okay, so this was the problem. Remember, as I recall, we had a street, we had various relatives at various locations, and we wanted to figure out what was the optimal address to minimize what? The sum of the distances to all the relatives, right? So how did we do this one?
I remember this one. I think we actually worked this one out. But let's just keep going. Let's go through it.
If I remember correctly, you find the median?
You want to say the median. So you say that putting it at the Vito's house here, he's got five relatives, making him live with the fifth, with the middle element, the third element, would be the one to minimize travel sums. Mm-hmm. Why is that? That's true. Give me an argument.
Okay. I hate to admit it. I never totally understood why.
Well, let's try to figure it out. We've got nothing but time. Okay?
How is it the trouble with distinguishing between the median and the mean at this time?
Well, the median and the mean, the easiest way to distinguish it is, let's say these were salaries of people. Okay? And we had the salaries of all the people in the class and Bill Gates.
No.
So let's just think what that means here. Okay? The median is one of us. The mean, it might as well be Bill Gates. Okay? It's more than any of us will ever make. Okay? So that's what the difference separately is.
Yes.
So let's just think about this case. Suppose they were salaries. Suppose we wanted to minimize the sum of our distances to our relatives. Would we be better off? Well, actually, let's just think about it. Would we be better off lying, let's say, at the median, which is down here, or the mean, which is up here? Okay? Let's think about that. Okay? If we wanted to minimize the distance to all of our relatives, would being up here at the mean be a good or bad thing? To minimize the sum of the distances to our relatives, this be a good or bad thing?
No, because we still have a long distance. I mean, if you live there, you have a long distance to your relatives.
You have a shorter distance to visit Uncle Bill, but you also have a long distance to visit everybody else, right? So the distance that you're traveling here is what? Basically, you're about, let's say everybody makes zero compared to Bill, which is pretty much right. Okay? The average distance you will travel to each one of your people is Bill over 2. Okay? Right? So that's N times Bill over 2, which is a big number. If you park down here, what is the total sum of distances you will travel?
Zero
plus Bill. Okay? And so that is clearly a lot less. Does everybody sort of see that?
Okay?
Well, 10 people with enough skewing will do what you want. Think about the Bill. We have 10 people in this room, and we have Bill in this class. And Bill to them. Okay? That would be the exact same situation we have here. Here's one where the median differs wildly from the mean. And you're saying, well, usually in most examples it doesn't. And it's maybe that in the examples you built were not contorted enough for it to be different. But, again, the stock market has built examples where they are that contorted. Any questions? Okay? Why is the median the right answer, though? We have a proof that moving it from the median is a bad idea. What's going to happen if we move one step below the median? Is it going to get better or worse?
Okay, you're moving farther away from.
I was going to have to be the same thing as if you're moving one down. If you're adding one, if you're subtracting one down, then you're adding one up.
But to how many different people? Here, look at this example. You're moving closer to 2 people. How many people are you moving further from?
2.
Oh, 3.
3, excuse me, yes.
Because if there's an odd number moving away from the median increases the cost, right? Because more people are being hurt than helped. Okay? What if there were an even number of people?
That's 6 people here.
What's the median here?
It's still moving.
Oh.
Either this or this. Which median is the right one? Or which square is the one square you can live at to minimize the total distance?
Either one, third or fourth.
Why is that either one?
Because if you're in the third one, if you move, let's say you move up one and you move down one, you're getting closer to two, but you're getting farther away from four.
Very good. Okay. Well, what happens if you move up? What if you move between the medians? What's the cost of that? Is that better or worse?
I think if you stay within the median, just within those medians, I don't think it matters. It stays the same.
It shouldn't matter, right? Because you're getting further from these three and closer to those three. So now you have the opportunity to figure out which relatives you like better. Okay, if you have some choice here. Okay. But as I recall, that problem just tells you that you minimize the distance. It didn't tell you actually the house number. So
right.
The distance would be the same for any pair between here and here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that I think is an easy one to pick up if you want. Okay. Any questions? Any other problems that people had that they wanted to talk about?
Archaeologist dilemma.
Which one was this one?
This was on section 5, page 121.
Okay. This one I gotta remember was a hard one. Let's just see what we have figured out. What was this problem? Archaeologist's dilemma. Which one was this one? What page?
121.
121. And the question was, we were given we wanted to figure out, what was the story? We're given as input an integer. We want to find the smallest positive integer such that the first digits of 2 to the e are those digits. Okay, so I'm giving you, there's a number here.
1, 0, 2, and the rest is too glorious to figure out. And we want to know what was the smallest value of 2 to the e, such that 2 to the e, the first three digits were 1, 0, 2. What is that value?
But there's some other weird condition here about the size, right? It says that that the number of legible digits, though, is strictly smaller than the number of lost ones. Okay, so this would not be the answer that she wanted. Okay?
Because in fact, what she's saying is if there's more digits lost, then are there. What?
At least three more.
It needs at least three more. Okay? Well, let's think what that actually means. What could we, how might we do this? Okay? Now, one way to do it would be, what's the upper bound on what E can be?
A little over 2 million, okay?
4i goes from 1 to 2 million. Compute 2 to the E, 2 billion. Compute 2 to the E and then ask if the first two digits were that. Okay, but that's trouble, right? That's not going to work very well, is it? Yeah?
What do you have then? Did this get through the judge? Did this get through the judge?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I
got it. Okay, so then what do you want?
we've done the verbs two different things. And there are some differences that we wrote that with this number. F.
No.
No. And yet the thing isn't different. And suppose those different digits are zero. That's going to be less than the real number, it's 2 for B. Right? That would be less than 1. Because if you increase that number by 1, that would be another bound.
Okay, does everybody see this inequality? That actually is true here, okay? He said it for the right answer. Okay, we have the property that the first n digits are what was given. Then there is some number of digits k that is after it. That is what you call it. That we don't know what the answers are. But the largest values between them could be all zeros. The smallest values would be if they were all zeros. And the largest values would be if they were all nines. Right? If they were all nines, then n plus 1 times 10 to the k is going to be bigger than it. If they were all zeros, it would be this, right? And so therefore what he's saying is 2 to the e has to lie between that. That makes sense, okay?
But I thought these were binary numbers. Wouldn't it be actually 1? Oh, we're just converting to decimal, okay.
These are decimal numbers now. You know those things that they have there are not binary. The powers of 2, but you know, I guess that this alien civilization wrote in decimal. Is that right?
I was never sure. I always had trouble with the way they
described. Yeah, I mean, it looks like the sample input was 2. That would mean that these are... Right, okay.
So what is solved that? But I mean,
that's a long
There's three kinds of logs that we might care about. There's binary, which is base 2.
There's
base e logs, which are natural. And there's base 10, which is common. Okay? The only one that would be useless is the natural one, right? So you get base 2 logs, right? Okay, fine. You could add minus k log 10 to this, and this. And that would cancel it from two sides. Okay? Look for what the e is. You want to solve for e. What possibility would... So let's just think what it would be. This number is known. K we don't know. But
and then stop K is 0 and the one is 1. K is open. So you got minus 4 to K except that.
Finding the smallest K such this is probably not very helpful to us.
Well, such that E is lying between the two.
Okay. fit with this item you're saying.
Does this two instructions here go the only thing to buy is small ladder?
Okay.
And you've got to buy the smallest base such that as the meter.
Let's think what this actually means now. We're trying to find the E. We're not given E, we're given N. We also know something about K. K is potentially bigger than N, isn't it? K always has to be bigger than N. Or the number of digits in K has to be bigger than N, right?
Okay. K is the number of digits.
Number of missing digits, by the way they define the problem, is always bigger than n, right? Everybody did the number of digits of n, right? So let's think what we can do with this. This is interesting to know. Let's think what that actually means.
It's very good to say, you have maxed out all of number of digits given to a unit, which is like 12, as opposed to 27.
What do I think is the case here? Suppose we're iterating through E's. E's are the possible exponents, right? Okay, now one of the problems with iterating with the previous set of exponents was that we added the 2 to the n for that. Right? Now here it looks like you don't. Okay, which is one potential advantage. But let's just see what you're saying now. Now you've got log base 2 of n plus is it k log 10 compared to e. So, plus k log 10. I somehow want to subtract these two and see what happens. But what would be the meaning of this? I know that this is greater than e and this is less than e. What does this do to help me solve for e? I want to say, you couldn't use a loop to find a value for k, but the value for k is very large.
No, it's the number of missing digits.
K is the number of missing digits?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, so that's interesting. So maybe that's actually right. Okay, let's think about that. The number of missing digits for k is small. What's the largest possible number of missing digits that we could have?
N plus 1.
Well, let's think about it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I think there's something implicit with the fact that we know that the n is. Do you know anything about n? We know n is not that large, right? N can't be too large.
So let us think what this means. Well, let's just think about it. I mean, is it something we have to move through most 9 times? Let's think about that. We know that this is true. And therefore, if k is the number of digits in this other part, they say that it can't be done sometimes?
Or is it always true that it can be done?
They said you have a case where there's no power of 2.
Okay.
So I sort of agree with you that since you've got a 10 to the k here thing, things are growing fast. okay? And that once you get a K, that would give you a way to solve for what is the E, and you can then tell whether it's in that bound.
But what does it say when, what does this take you to do this?
E's got to be an integer.
E is an integer.
Right. And it's not
very important. Oh, okay. So E is going to have to lie between these two things. So let's think about what that actually means. What's the difference? The difference here is we've got a log k of n between n and n plus 1, right? That's really the triggering thing here. Okay? Like that actually may be the way that we're going to solve this thing. But look what he actually is saying. Okay? Under what condition E is strictly less than this and less than that? Are those strict things? Let's say that is it true that we're saying that this is, are these less than or less than or equal to? Okay. Less than or equal to?
Yeah, that's right, because if that is 2 is equal to that and that's equal to that, that means that the other two have to be equal. So at most, you can only have one of them being equal.
Most one of them can be equal, right?
Right.
So what does this actually mean now? This means that we've got a limit of property, and this is an integer, is that right? Mm-hmm. And this is an integer, okay? So the question is, under what condition is it that these are different integers, okay? That's really what you're sort of saying here. Because, although, actually it should be pretty clear that here that these are different integers. Right? So we think the logs of this, what do we actually now know? That's now going to tell us log base 2 of n plus k log base 2 of k is less than or equal to e, which is less than log base 2 of n plus 1. Plus k log n. Okay. Right? Now this is going to be an integer. This is going to be something that is different than an integer, right? If it's larger than this.
Wait.
What? E is an integer. Right, so this is not necessarily an integer either.
Can the other side be an integer too?
What?
Can the left side also definitely be an integer?
Can the left side be an integer?
Because if we already know that E is an integer,
it's log.
It's log, so it can't necessarily, you don't know it's going to be an integer.
No. But the fact there's a difference here. Here we know there's got to be an integer difference. They have to be different by actual integer value. What I was sort of hoping to say, was that the only possible values where this trigger were very, very precise. Okay? Like whenever log base of n plus 2 of n plus 1 rolled over to an integer. Okay? But that's not what I'm seeing here. So let us take a look at this actually. Suppose we
this part is the same. And the only thing is plus 1. Then you think about log base 2 to the 10,000.
They're not sure what you can do with this, though. Okay, we agree that we can subtract from all of these things log kn minus 2. So it's true that what this is saying is log 2 of n is less than or equal to e minus k log 10 is less than log n plus 1. Right? Certainly true. Now, we can certainly compute this and certainly compute that. Okay? And now you've got two unknown, well, E and K. Okay? So now what we've really got is this is an integer. But now we've really got sort of
not a
number, okay? It's presumably not that large, okay? This is, you've got this is a number, x. You know what x is. Less than or equal to e minus some constant times k, right, is less than or equal to x plus epsilon, right? Very, very small amount. Now, E, what do we actually know about, what do we know about E and K? E has the property that it's at least, E is greater than the number of digits, right? So have you known about how many digits E has to be? What do we know on E, about E? What?
I don't know if you can make any.
What is the input here? The input was N, right?
We know that K has to be N has to be at least N plus 1.
No, K has to have more digits than N plus 1, right? Is that right?
So K we know has to, I think, be greater than or equal to the ceiling of the log base 10 of n. Right? Because that's the number of digits, right? So we now know what a lower bound on k is. Certainly we can now go through and test for a given value of k, the number of digits, what is the appropriate value of e? Does it exist? Okay? Now, let's see if we can get something closer here. So somehow we now know K is an integer, right? E is also an integer, isn't it? Right? Now, suppose we subtract x from everything now, right? What do we now know? We now know that 0, okay, is less than or equal to e minus constant k minus x is less than epsilon, okay? That's the equivalent statement, right? We know that this and this are an integer, right? And what we really want to now know is epsilon is going to be very, very small, right? So what does that actually tell us?
Thank you.
isolate E. What? I want to try to do something analytical. In my art of arts, I want to say something analytical can be done here. Okay? Let's just think about this a little bit. I want to say maybe something with ceilings and floors. Ceiling and floor functions. Remember, we're rounding integers to this thing. This is an integer. This is an integer. This is a float. Float. Okay? So what do we actually know now?
I just want to clarify, you know k is an integer, a constant won't be an integer, however.
You know k will be an integer, right, the constant is not an integer.
Okay, just want to make sure.
But what then is really sort of the interesting values are? The really interesting values are basically going to be, when is e minus this constant times k roughly equal to zero, right? That's really, or equal to x. That's really about when things are happening here, right? So really what we've done here is something like, I see, this maybe is just the equation that you're giving me. You want to try to find what e is by computing different values of k. Okay? And that seems like it might work. I'm still not sure I see when you can tell when. That would in principle work according to this. I kind of believe that, because I don't see where, how you know whether when there is not a solution.
Well, you're told that n can't be big, 10 is no, that is no bigger than, what is it, 2 billion something or another.
What?
So that means that you're going to be given an integer that'll have at most 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, that at most have 10 integers.
So
k has to be strictly bigger than n. So in other words, you can go keep going until you reach k plus 1.
Yeah.
Unless I'm reading the question wrong.
K
is strictly greater than the log base 10 of n.
Because
the number of digits there is larger.
That's right, but k can still be much, much bigger. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking all wrong. I just give the lower bound. You're right, there is an element.
So k can be very, very large.
What if you calculate, I'm not sure what the value of 2 to k is 2 billion, but once you find that k value, wouldn't that be the max?
See, the finiteness seems to go the wrong way. That's the trouble. If we knew that n was bigger than k, the number of digits in the known part were longer than the number of digits in the unknown part, then we would have to search only a small number of them. The value of k by this measure. Use it in infinite loop. And so everyone basically did it, right? Okay, can we prove this would work if, and probably work pretty quickly, because the number of digits is growing quite rapidly here. As you're dealing, incrementing on k, the number of digits. Can we prove that there is always a solution? Well, let's think about it. Is it clear that there is always a solution? That n, any n, that for any n, there times 2 to the k, there exists a k, such that n times 2 to the k is going to be between okay, this would be a power of 2. But there is an n. Does there exist, always exist a k such that if there exists, big less, does there exist a k? Or an n, I guess. Like e. Such that 2 to the e is going to be equal to n times 2 to the k plus we want to say that these are the first few digits of this. Give me the first few digits. You probably think there's always some power of 2 in those digits.
That's a prefix. That's really the question you need.
To be honest with you, I don't see a proof of this. So I'm sort of in the state where you, which is that I can say I can loop through this thing, but I don't yet see why there's always a solution. Okay? You're assuming you're always in the solution. Okay?
So you got this past the judge.
So that's a sign that maybe that's true. Again, I really want to prove it, but I don't often see how to do that.
Could that be an accident, maybe? Like, you can't prove it, you just know it's
true? No. If I can't prove it, it means very little.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's no. If I can't prove it, it doesn't mean you can't prove it.
Okay.
Okay? It's a sign that my number theory is a little bit rusty.
How would the program know when to print the power of 2?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. His theory is you never have to print no power of 2.
I mean, okay. What do they mean by that? No, it's going to be bigger than the trillion thing. Does that mean that that number could actually be higher?
Well, what he's telling us is no input.
Yeah. Does that mean like the number could actually go up to 2 trillion? I mean, remember you wouldn't be able to handle that.
2 to the, well, wait.
So what happens is n can't be any bigger than that, but k, this is the only condition on k,
yeah,
is that's the
one. This whole answer would be like 2 billion could be the first 10 digits, but then there'll be another 20, there'd be at least another 10 digits, correct? We don't know that.
But right, yeah.
So that, be able to actually handle
well, this is why we don't want to use, actually explicitly compute 2 to the e. So this is a messy one. Okay. Again, this is one that was probably wrong. Okay.
I just want to make sure x is net is log base 2 of n, and the constant is log base 2.
So the real equation that we have, the raw equation to work with that we sort of trust, is this: the log base 2 of n plus k log base 2 of n. Is less than or equal to e, and is greater than, which is less than log base 2 of n plus 1. Okay. And somehow the interesting thing is that for any large n, of course, the difference between this and this is going to be extremely small, which means that you have fairly tight constraints on what E and K are. But I don't yet really see how to take advantage of it. Right. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Does anybody else have any other pet problems that we can get back quickly?
Yeah,
I wasn't too happy with self-described the sequence.
Oh, okay, that was one that we forget. Which one was this? Which page? Page is it?
144.
I was actually quite happy with that. But let's take a look at this thing. Well, let's take a look at what the problem was.
The problem was that we had a sequence of numbers that were defined as 1, 2, 3, so the value is n. F of n is a well-defined sequence where it has exactly 1, 1, No. The number of ones is one. The number, it's just the biggest written in Euclidean order, right? So, there's exactly f of n, exactly 1, 1, f of n 1s, 1, 1s, exactly f of 2, 2s, so we better have a 2, 2s there. It has exactly 2, 3s. It has exactly 3, 4s. Is this the right sequence? Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, so I mean, there's a little bit of weirdness at the beginning, but if we accept that it starts with 1, 2, then it's well defined, right? Because this thing is going to be growing, you know, quite rapidly. Okay, so for every, certainly for every successive number, how many 5s do we add? 3. So we're now ahead of ourselves. We have now described for every integer how many times it will appear. And the sequence is well defined, right? So what is it that it's asking you?
Select the number down the road.
So if I now ask you, what am I asking you to do? I ask you to compute f of n
for a particular value of n?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's asking you?
Yep.
So if I want to know f of 20, okay, one thing I could do is, of course, explicitly compute this sequence. But what is the value of n that I might actually be given?
Oh, yeah.
So if we try to compute it by storing it in an array and walking out, we needed 2 billion cells. And that was dangerous, right? That is not going to happen.
Not this year.
What? Not this year. So how would we compute what f of n is? Okay. And the important point was we couldn't compute 2 billion cells worth. Could we compute some function that would be a... more tractable the way to sort of store this sequence. Okay? Suppose we, what I want to compute is, it seems to me, let's let g of n, the sequence g, is going to be the sequences of where do where does the first occurrence of the number happen? The first occurrence of 1 is here. The first occurrence of 2 is 2. The first occurrence of 3 is 3. The first occurrence of 4 of, let's say, 4 is 6. The first occurrence of 5 is 9. Okay? Let's try this function.
So the first occurrence of 3 is...
So g sub I is the position of the first occurrence of I. The first occurrence of 1 appeared in 1, 2 appeared in 2, of 3 appeared in 4, of 4 appeared in 6, of 5 appeared in 7. Suppose I had this function tabulated for all n. Could that enable me to compute f of n, f of I, sorry, f of n, some value of n? Well, suppose I had this function. Given this function, could I tell you what what f of I would be? What would f of I be? Okay. How would you do f of I? We had this function. I haven't yet talked about how to compute it. where does I fit in this sequence of numbers, right? What? Yeah, it's basically the inverse of J. Right? So it's basically known that if you found out where did it fit between, it's presumably the smaller I such that it fit between, that our number fit between these two bounds, right? So I want to claim that if you compute G sub I, you would be able to compute F sub I. Everybody agree with that?
How do you do it again? I mean, I believe you, I just don't quite understand.
Well, what do we know here? Suppose, let's say, that we want to know what F of 8 is. What is F of 8? Well, we know that F, in the first place where 4 started, was 6. And the first place that 5 started was 9. Right? So what is the value of F of 8? Has to be 4. Why? Because it was, the 5 started in 8, in 9, the 4 started in 6, so what was it in 8? We still have the 4s, right?
Oh.
Okay, does everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Well, this tells us where did the transitions happen? We know where how many 5s were there?
Great.
6. How many 6s are there? 4? We know where the transitions happen. We know the positions of these transitions. And I now want to know what's the value of this number. Well, it lies after the start of the 5s and before the start of the 6s. It had better be a 5, right? Everybody agree with that? So, can we compute this, is now the question. Okay, here's where we were last time.
Well, if you're given I, the only thing you do is start from the beginning and keep going until you find a flip spot that you're in between, and then that's the number that you want.
Well, let's think about it, though, now. F of n, we're going to be computing F of n. How would we go about computing now?
What is G of I? Can you give me a way to compute G of I quickly without going through everything? G of I is going to be equal to, I claim, G of I minus 1 is the following right. G of I is equal to G of I minus 1 plus F of I. Let's think about that. You agree with that? Why is that? Because it tells us so what is the value of G of I? Where is the I transition? Well, we're going to put down this tells us where did the I minus 1 start? And then how many I minus 1s were there? It's either F of I or F of I minus 1. Right? I'm not sure which one it is. But I claim that this is the function that I want, right? Does everybody agree with that?
But aren't you back where you started from? Does that mean you have to calculate F of I?
No, because to calculate F of I, we agree, is looking it up in the G of I table.
Oh.
Okay? So one possibility is if I build this G of I table, okay, I can now compute F of I by looking back up in that table, right? By looking it up like we did suggested by this formula, right? I want to find from my value of I which two integers does it sit between. Okay? Does that make sense? I think this is now perfectly clean. Okay? Right. I'm giving you the G's up to I. Remember, G of I lets us go much further beyond F of I, right? G of I is telling us what is the position of the ith element of the first position of I? F of I tells us the value of the ith element. Yeah, you do. But G of I, notice, grows a lot slower than F of I. Right? I mean, it's about that the indices here. Remember, we're counting the number of transitions. I to G of I is counting the number of transitions. The number of transitions is much less than the number of actual elements. Right?
Yeah.
You see here that this felt much smaller number of transitions than actual elements, right? Does everybody see that? How many transitions are there? You have to actually count them, but I believe the number of transitions will be order square root n. Here's what I believe. We somehow were summing things up. Okay? What is the square root of 2 billion? Is that a problem? 2 billion is a large number. But what is a square root of 2 billion?
Let me do it in kind of a funny way. Hack off two zeros and write one. Hack off two zeros and write one. Hack off two zeros and write one. Two zeros and write one. Okay? And now I've got a square root of 20. Let's make it 100 just for the sake of it. Okay?
I want to claim 100,000 squared is going to be 2 billion, right? Okay? It's not yet clear it works because it's not clear it grows like exactly like square root n. But the order of the size of this function is now relatively small.
You got to let her at some deal. You have to build it once on this.
You have to build it once. Okay? And this I would claim is a way that will work. Okay? You have to get the actual formula right here. I mean, I'm not sure if it's I or I minus 1 or what it is. But that I claim you can figure out. Right? But this, I think, will do the job. Did anybody get this rule working? This is the way that they did it? Did anybody get this working?
Larry.
Yeah, did you get it working? Was it something like this? More or less?
Okay.
Good. Okay. So I just want to make sure I get this clear. To find G of I, you need to
find... So what I'm going to say, the way that I would do this, is to set, okay. Basically, F of I is Gollum sequence, or self-describing sequence. Right? G sub I is the smallest x such that F sub X equals R. That's exactly what this is. Am I right? Tells me where the transitions are.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then what I want to claim is F sub I, F is computable from G by binary search.
Oh yeah, of course.
Right? And G sub I, the transition for I, the smallest place where I occurs, tell me where the smallest place where I minus 1 occurs. Right? Where's the smallest place where I occurs in the sequence? It comes right after the I minus 1, right? So it's the smallest place where the I minus 1 occurs. Plus what? Plus, how many times does I minus 1 occur? Does I minus 1 occur, right? That's really it, right? Because I've got to skip over all those I minus 1s. Right? So that's going to be what?
I claim f of I minus 1.
Right? And I think this is right. There may be a plus 1 needed. But I don't think so, right? Recursive thing, right? But you can tabulate this thing. You can avoid the recursion by storing the values.
Like a dynamic memory, so to speak.
What?
Use dynamic memory.
Use a dynamic programming kind of thing, right? Build an array of these things, and this I think will do it. Okay? But this I don't think is that hard to program now, right? I'll make it so. That's all I'm saying. And you could do it recursively. Now, what is the problem, though? You can't compute f sub I. Well, okay, let's f sub I. The problem with f sub I is now that to compute the f sub I, we need a lot of values of g. So there's a way to do this recursively, probably, but I think it's probably, you could do this recursively, but it is going to be expensive, right? Because how are you going to do this binary search to find out where f sub I is? We're going to have to compute all these intermediate g's. So there may be a way to do it without storing everything. But my hunch is that the easier way to do it is to store these things. You know, and I think there's enough space that there's no real issue here. And if there is enough space, the recursion will probably kill you in some way. Probably more money. But you can play around.
Can you give like a small example of why you can
Well, let's try to figure this thing out. So what am I going to do here? Let's just try this. So you want to find, what is this? You want to compute g of 10? What number do you want to compute? Which, f of 10 or g of 10 or what?
G of 10.
So g of 10. G of 10 is going to be g of y. Let's start out with something simple. What is g of 1?
G of 1 is 1.
Let's start with what values of 2 you can. G of 2 is what?
2.
G of 1 plus f of 1, which is what? 2. What's G of 3 going to be? It's 2 plus f of 3, which is 4. Is that right? Is that where the 3 start?
Yes, it is.
Okay. G of 4 is what? G of 3 plus this, it's plus 3 is 7, right? Is that where the 4 start? Wait, no. G of 3 plus G of, no. G of, no, no, it's where the 3's are. So 3 is 2, it should be 6. Everybody agree? G of 5 is what? G of 4 is 6 plus, how many times does 4 occur? I'm going to claim it's the ninth position. Right? Because it's an f minus 1 there. Okay, so far we can still focus on the board. This is going to be 9 plus f of 5. Right? F of 5 is still on the board, right? So we didn't have to go to the binary. But how did we compute what f of 5 was? What? F of 5 has been, where is 5 between? F of 5 has got to be a 3, right?
Oh, okay.
Right? Recursively, basically. Okay.
So find f of 5.
The next one is going to be g of 7 is what? It's going, where did the 7 start? Well, they start after 12. And where does 7 start? Well, it's going to be 4 7s, right?
Yeah.
So plus yes. 4.
Do a binary search of the two dots.
Right? So I'm not seeing anything so difficult here. G of 8 is what? 16. Plus, where's the 8s? No, 4. Okay? So this certainly, if I can do the binary searches, okay, I can, you know, if I can store this table up, this is easy. How big is that table? You have to tell me.
Okay, but I think it's not going to be so. I don't think it's going to be.
You can have room for what, a million? How many of that in just in store typically? But you have big an array can you build these days comfortably?
Millions?
Because you're already, you've got to make it, or it's.
I think it is about a million. I think that's not about right.
I'm not worried about it. I think you can do it. Okay? So,
if you can, let's have an email this way. But that's how I would be. Any questions?
And you keep going until your value is greater than 2 million. Until G, the value that's stored in that index of G is about 2 million.
Right. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So we've got a couple other cheap problems to solve if you haven't done so already. Okay? I don't really want you to, I was hoping you would work it during the semester. I don't really want everybody to work hard during the final, to interfere with your other finals. But again, if you want to knock off a couple of these, it's fine with me. Okay?
So come on to the final on the 20th, and now if I come to my office on the 20th in your assigned time slot, and I look forward to talking to you then. Okay, take care. Have a good luck on finals.
Thank you.
Adios.